everybody at the meeting. Can I specifically also welcome correctional services members who are here present? We know the bill impacts correctional services, and there's a specific section in the bill that deals with correctional services officers, and we would like their input on that. Just make sure to give the members first time. We want to welcome them to this meeting. Justice has also been invited, and I don't see any of them here. I presume they don't have any problems with the bill. We will ask that Johanna Longa, Commissioner Jacob, can I ask you that you just get in contact with Johanna Longa and ask him to, where possible, attend these meetings on Justice's behalf from their side so that we can get the input in terms of the bill. He has been here when the clause by clause was done the first time around. We woke up this morning to some disturbing news of the murder of a police general in Pretoria, the cluster commander for Johannesburg, apparently. And he was murdered in Pretoria. His body was found in Mamelodi, if I'm not mistaken. And we do hope that in the pursuit of justice for that specific murder, we get the clear answers on what happened there. It's a serious concern. Police killings in general is a serious concern, but it becomes a matter of grave concern when it's your leadership that gets killed in this way. And our sympathy and condolences to the family of the general, to the police in totality, and we hope for shift justice in this regard as well. I'm going to start up the meeting by asking the department to take us through the homework that has been given last Thursday to have a look at that. That includes the whole issue on whether this bill is in line with the protection of private personal information and the various other issues that we did highlight. So I'm going to ask them to start with that, and then thereafter we're immediately going to stop with the different with clause 1, so they can go through that. Clause 1 to 5 is basically the clauses that impact on correctional services as well as on the Criminal Procedures Act. So if possible, I'd like us to try and see whether we can't finish those first 5 clauses today so that we can get the input at that point. Commissioner Jacobs, over to yourself, please.
Thank you, Chair. We have made the submission in writing. I have 11 copies. There are some more copies on its way, Chairperson. But if the Chairperson is in agreement, we can hand out these copies that we do have, 11. It's an additional document. The other one is the presentation we'll use with Correction Services and E-Justice Supervision. There are some more copies that's on their way yet, but I think we could start on...
So we can give members first. Anybody else who wants to, you can just wait for members first to get, and then when the other copies come, we can give to our visitors as well. Okay, all members have copies, so let's start, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first issue was on clause 1 of the bill, where there were some observations regarding the issue of the designated area, and we said that the portfolio committee might wish to look again at the concept of designated area where a buckle swap may be taken. It was indicated that the definition is wide enough to cover a designated room or, for example, a tent outside the building. Chair, I can maybe just mention as well that when it comes to the taking of a buckle swap or DNA profile outside the building, it will actually be very limited, because you will realize that with a roadblock, there is actually a requirement that a warrant must be obtained before a buckle swab may be taken. Shall I continue with the issues? Thanks. Clause 6 of the bill proposed section 15G of the South African Police Service Act. The portfolio committee indicated that it requires to be addressed on the migration between indices, and it was indicated that Major General Shezi will address the committee on that, Chair.
Can I make the following ruling? I don't want you to go past six. So let's start with one. Let's start with the bill itself. As we go on, you will then indicate to us that there was something from the public hearing that we can go back to. So that when we get to six, till 16, we can address the issues at that point. So can I ask you then to refer to the colour copy that you've received, so that we can start? Mr. Jacobs? Mm.
Thank you, Chair. And just to elucidate, we have made the key on the front page. In terms of the colors that are used, Republic of South Africa, for example, is shadowed in yellow, bright yellow. That is the text of the bill. Where you have text in normal black font, it actually is the text of existing legislation in order to show the context of the insertions and the deletions. And where there is text in red font and in square brackets, it shows deletions from the actual legislation. And then lastly, text in blue font and underlined shows insertions into the legislation. Thank you, Chair. I'm not going to spend time on the long title of the bill. So the first one is the amendment of Section 36A of Act 31 of 1977, that's the Criminal Procedure Act, as inserted by Section 2 of Act 6 of 2010. Section 36A of the Criminal Procedure Act is hereby amended, and then you will see the first part in black is the existing text, and then the first amendment is A on page 3, by the insertion before the definition of authorized person of the following definition. That's the definition of authorized officer as AA, means the police officer commanding the division responsible for forensic services within the service or his or her delegate. B, by the substitution for the definition of authorized person of the following definition, authorized person means Roman 1 with reference to photographic images, fingerprints or body prints, any police official, and then we insert or a member of the Independent Police Investigative Directorate, referred to in the Independent Police Investigative Directorate Act 2011, Act 1 of 2011, in the performance of his or her official duties. And to insert Roman 2, with reference to buckle samples, any police official or member of the Independent Police Investigative Directorate, referred to in the Independent Police Investigative Directorate Act, who is not a crime scene examiner, but has successfully undergone the training prescribed by the Minister of Health under the National Health Act 2003 in respect of the taking of a buccal sample. And three, any registered medical practitioner or registered nurse defined in the National Health Act providing services to the Department of Correctional Services. Chair, the definition of body prints is an existing definition in the Act. And then there's an amendment C by the insertion after the definition of authorized person. Body prints, Chair, I think with the original copy, there was a mistake here that we proposed that the definition follow the definition of body prints and not as indicated in the bill, authorized person. So it will read then, CAA, a bodily sample, means any type of sample taken from a person and includes intimate and non-intimate samples. And also the insertion of CB, a buccal sample means a sample of cellular material taken from the inside of a person's mouth. Child is an existing definition in the Act, and Child Justice Act is also an existing definition. And then D, by the Constitution for the definition of comparative search of the following definition. Comparative search means the comparing by an authorized person of one, fingerprints, body prints or photographic images taken under any power conferred by this chapter against any database referred to in Chapter 5A of the South African Police Service Act and Roman II forensic DNA profile derived from body samples taken under any power conferred by this chapter against forensic DNA profiles contained in different indices of the NFDD referred to in Chapter 5A of the South African Police Service Act. And E, by the insertion after the definition of comparative search of the following paragraphs. FA, crime scene sample, means physical evidence which is retrieved from the crime scene or any other place where evidence of a crime may be found and may include physical evidence collected from the body of a person. FB, DNA means dinucleic acid, which is a biochemical molecule found in the cells and that makes each species unique. FC, forensic DNA analysis, means the analysis of sections of a dinucleic acid of a body sample to determine the forensic DNA profile, provided that this does not relate to any analysis pertaining to medical tests or for health purposes or mental characteristics of a person, or to determine any physical information of the person other than the gender. FD, forensic DNA profile, means the results obtained from forensic DNA analysis of bodily samples taken from a person or from a crime scene, providing a unique string of alphanumeric characters to provide identity reference, provided that this does not contain any information on the health or medical condition or mental characteristic of a person or the predisposition or physical information of the person other than the gender. FE, intimate sample, means a sample of blood or pubic hair or a sample taken from the genitals or anal orifice area from the body of a person excluding a buccal sample. FG, NFDD, means the National Forensic DNA Database of South Africa, established in terms of Section 15G of the South African Police Service Act. And FH, non-intimate sample, means a buccal sample, a sample taken from a nail or from under the nail of a person. G is an existing definition of the South African Police Service Act. And then F, insert the substitution in subsection 2 for the words preceding paragraph A of the following words. Any police official who, in terms of this act or any other law, takes the fingerprints, a body print or bodily sample, or ascertains any body feature of a child must, and then share the same provisions in respect of a child as applicable as with the fingerprints. On page 7, G, by the addition of the following subsections.
Can I ask that we stop here first and that we discuss this part of it, otherwise we're going to follow it. Millis, can we look at what is being put before us and remind ourselves also about the input that we've received? Members will also see that there is a 3-page document that the researchers handed out, plus also at the comprehensive summary of the input that was received, that was handed out when we started with the book, also from the research section. can we look at it? Can we take it one by one? 1, Section 36A of the Criminal Procedure Act amended. Any problems there? Up to 7. With other words, page 3, Section 36A, 1, up to Roman 7. Are we satisfied with that? I will call about it.
Thank you. Chair, I've been looking at the status of the authorized person. And in certain countries, such as Australia, a buccal sample is, because it means putting something, inserting it into a person's mouth, it's actually considered to be an intimate sample. So I'm just saying that we might be leaving ourselves open to something of a challenge here. By defining who may do this, you are excluding the possibility that any person may ever self-administer a buccal swab. Now, we visited the laboratories in Canada and the UK. We administered our own buccal, well, those of us who did it, did our own buccal samples. That is standard procedure there. I just think if you have people who are coming forward and saying, I'm prepared to give you my DNA, for example, to exclude me because my DNA may be at the scene or whatever, they're offering it. Now you're saying a stranger must stick something in their mouth. There's nothing here either that says that I've seen anywhere that determines the sex of the person who may do that. So I'm just raising a few warning flags here that I don't know that we need to leave the door open a bit in that area.
A bit ahead of what we are dealing with now. We're going to come to that part. I didn't want to stop you. That's fine. It's the next issue that we're talking about. But can we just look at section 36A1 up to Roman 7? 1A up to Roman 7. Are we satisfied with that? I don't see any problems there, members. Satisfied? Can we satisfy? Then A, the insertion before the definition of authorized person of the following definition. Authorized officer. And then the authorized persons, and that is where Honourable Quilibana's issue comes in. Can we hear you on that issue as well as on the fact that it does not refer to a medical practitioner and whether we should not include there also any registered medical practitioner or registered nurse as contemplated in the National Health Act? Can we hear you on those, department?
Chair, the intention with this is to really authorized person will be a person who can take a buccal swab, and then firstly within the police service it will be a member of the police or a member of the of IPIT. But when you get to Roman 3, it refers to the Department of Correctional Services. So the intention is that when a buccal swab is being taken in the Department of Correctional Services, it will never be an official who will be taking it. It will always be a medical practitioner or a registered nurse. So when you're in the police station, it will be a police officer who's specifically trained, and when you are in a correctional service facility, it must be a registered doctor or registered nurse giving services to that department. Thank you, Dan.
Sorry, could I ask if my issues could be addressed?
Yeah, I've asked that they do that. The issue of the cell taking off the sample, can you address us on that issue?
Normally this has been seen as a search. So normally it must be a male that perform the it in respect of male and female in respect of female. And I think then with the children you have the additional prescripts in respect of the protection of the child's rights. But I agree it's not specifically set out in the book in terms of gender.
Should we not look at the possibility of setting it out on the book? Commissioner Shazi, and then I'm coming back to members for questions.
Yeah, thank you, Chef. Part of the understanding of the question that I understood from Honourable Golda is whether the person could be afforded an opportunity to take the sample by themselves, not necessarily the gender issue. During the portioning of the training, part of that will include that provision, because it is an observable tendency. If somebody puts the swab within the mouth, you will observe it if the sample has been taken correctly. But I'm not sure if it will create any value to specify it like that in an act at that level. But during the provision of the training, a person can take a sample by themselves if they are allowed an opportunity. They don't want the police officer to take a sample.
I'll come back to you, Honourable Mulane George. Honourable Mbogo.
No, my thank you, Jefferson. My question to the commissioner is that if you don't specify, does that mean therefore I'm allowed to do so without any consent of the police officer? I'm asking that because if I know that in the bill we can't be elaborate, we put everything in the bill. But if you don't specify, especially taking off samples, especially we talk about buccal samples, does it mean therefore I'm allowed to do so without the consent of the officer or whatever?
Correct, Chairperson. During the arrest processes, because of the warrant, for example,
A police normally reads the right of a person, you know, from whom you will get a sample. All those rights will be ready, a person, you know, you've got a right to do it. But when the warrant is already issued, say, I'm going to collect a sample, a person will say, I'm not comfortable with you taking a sample from me. I don't really see if there will be an issue with a person, a police officer, because they are under authority of the police officer at the time, says, you will take the sample and then you will give the sample, because if not, I'm the one collecting the sample. I'm not sure how this issue can be sorted out, but I was only showing to the portfolio to say it is a provision that we can allow, that we can write it, but even if it's not written, I don't see that there could be a challenge from the taking point of view, given that the person is still in, the police officer is still in charge of that taking.
I think by not including self-administration somewhere, the possibility, well, that is allowed. An officer looking at the bill will say, no, look, I have to take this. And well, then, I mean, it could lead to people being held down and forcibly taken. It could, lots of stuff could happen. I'm just saying that you're saying it is quite obvious to you. That, I mean, you can see very clearly if a person is taking it directly. That seems obvious to you, but will it be obvious to the guy on the ground? Because I don't want pictures of three guys holding a woman down and forcing her mouth open and forcing her, you know. Believe me, this can happen, unless we are crystal clear.
Honourable George?
Madam Chair, I wanted to say to General Schiess, if you admit that self-administration can be done, I would prefer and advise that it be written down. You see, sometimes not all of our police are as good as you people you are today in this hall. When they are there, some of them, they sometimes behave like wild animals. You put a letter to test and you say, no, I can say, hey man, so I'm saying, if you say it's allowed, I would rather let's put it in the bill, rather to take a chance and assume that all our police are reasonable people, because they are not.
The question now is just whether it should be under definitions or whether it should come later in law. That's the other issue. So I don't know if we look at G by the addition of the following says the subsection on page 7, whether it, you know, we have an opposite there, but they can't come in there, maybe. But I'm not sure about the definition. Just before I come back to you, can I also ask that you explain to us the sentence Roman 2, B Roman 2, on page 4, who's not a crime scene examiner. Just explain to us so that we understand what that means.
Thank you, Chair. Earlier on when we were discussing the clause, we had said for conditions of for ethical consideration, as well as excluding the fact that there may be allegations that a crime scene examiner had actually planted a reference sample in the crime scene that he is examining. Rather, the crime scene examiner who is examining the crime scene not take the reference sample to eliminate those thoughts that the evidence could have been planted, because the same person who examined the scene is the same person who also took a sample. How can you be sure that there's independence? That's what it means.
The very next one would be and the Roman 3. Do we need to refer there that the persons that the registered nurse or medical practitioner has also undergone this training, or is it not necessary?
Chair, for all practical purposes, it is necessary, because it doesn't, by implication, imply that they already know, because it's something that, earlier on when I was saying this, I said it's quite funny, only that the National Health Act does not provide that the forensics train the people to do this, but it is us who's going to be training them to train us. So it is that kind of a setup. So they should also be trained.
So they should be trained, is what you're saying. Can we then ask that the office look at that? And that they just maybe include the at the end something like that, and that has successfully undergone the training described by the Minister of Health, just that sentence in that subfee. Now, a question to correctional services members who are here, because free refers to any registered medical practitioner or registered nurse defined in the National Health Act providing services to the Department of Correctional Services. I do think we need to know and get information from you in terms of what's the capacity. Because if I may just quickly say that first part of this legislation would in fact deal with those people who have already been convicted and gathering their DNA in correctional service facilities. That would be to populate the DNA database. So can you give us an idea of the capacity that correctional services have in order to do that? I mean, you've got hundreds of thousands of prisoners, and I don't know how many doctors and medical practitioners you do have that can actually take these samples. Or is it a pipe dream that we have? Global.
I think that... What? I think Jefferson, I'm just jumping the gun, but I think if you're asking a million-dollar question here, because when you talk about capacity of the department, as we speak about the fully trained people who are supposed to take that, it will be a challenge to the department. That's right. That is why, therefore, we have to think carefully of how we're going to cooperate this thing. Because it is a challenge as we speak. Because professional people in the professional service are challenges. Yeah, a lot of challenges. I'm not speaking on behalf of everybody, but members of the correctional service are here to just read what I'm saying. Because if we rely on the professionalism in the correctional service, that means that a lot of things will be checked out.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to support Andrew, as he said, about professionalism in terms of correctional service. But because we've got this invitation on Friday, didn't have enough time to talk to the department. I think the department will be able to give us a right answer on this thing. We don't want you to comment so much about it. Thank you.
Yeah, I think for us the issue is there a doctor at every single correctional service facility that can do this? That's what it boils down to. Honourable Mnuleke George, Honourable Kwela Barnard, and then Commissioner Shezi.
Madam Chair, I think I'm being covered by the speaker from correctional service, because I was going to suggest that we invite the National Commissioner, but the DG, because I think this is a person who can speak authoritatively or in confidence about whether that department, because it's sometimes going to be very difficult for these politicians to commit a department which they are not involved. That's why my advice is to help if we could get somebody from correctional services themselves, that is either DG or
he's
or
two things, Chair. The concern about B2, where it says who is not a crime scene examiner. We've been to Iceford offices where the entire staff contingent is maybe four people. They may all be trained as crime scene examiners, or two or three crime scene examiners and a secretary. Now you're saying nobody there may take the sample. So I think it should read who is not the crime scene examiner in a particular case. It's just a case of tweaking it. Otherwise, you're cutting all of them. The second thing I thought was that under that definition of authorized person, in reference to the buccal samples, one could add a four there, saying any person who voluntarily wishes to self-administer the buccal. Then that would put, that means an individual who wants to take it himself is an authorized person.
Commissioner Shearer. Thank you, Chair. Perhaps let me start with the last question of self-administration. Chapter 36D1, if you can refer the committee to the start of the bill. If the subject to 36A5, an authorized person shall take a buccal sample or shall cause that sample to be taken. I thought that during the first deliberation when it was discussed, that had compensated for that, unless it should be reread in a different light, because it was during those discussions that that was highlighted in the fashion that it was. So I don't know whether it must now move also to the definition part of it in the authorized person, but this is a process now of taking a person. But that definition is talking to who is the authorized person. So the person who's taking, if a person is a suspect, the person is not an authorized person. So the person can't be in the definition. That was how I understood it. However, in the processing itself, it is really calls for the self-administration of the taking of a sample. In the real bill, it's 54. In the DNA bill, the previous bill, not the, I mean the document that you are working on now.
It's 14 of the amendment.
Yes, 14 of the amendment. Thank you.
Doesn't, because it refers to medical practitioners. It does, sorry, can you switch off your microphone, please? It does not deal with it because it refers very specifically to a medical practitioner.
Okay.
So it does not refer to it. But members, we dealt with that issue to some extent. We will come back to it again.
Okay.
I said they must look at places where it can come in. I don't think it necessarily needs to be under definition. But can you also respond to the other part of the comment that was made?
The second comment, Chair, is the one on the crime scene examiner. The discussion also took place earlier on. I think it is quite logical if it is the crime scene examiner of the particular case. The question at the time that was discussed was how many of the crime scene people, the number of crime scenes are examined by one person given the capacity challenge. So you would find that in any given area, a crime scene examiner will examine about 3 or 4 of these crime scenes. So it's a little bit difficult. How do you exclude them from which of the crime scenes? But logically, yes, it is correct that it shouldn't necessarily be their particular crime scene that they examine, so that they are given a chance. Because part of the training will also include the crime scene examiners, which were not first of the priorities during the training process. It will be first with detectives, then dispatch, then crime scene examiners. At some point, they will be trained, but they will then have to administer that. So I agree, it may be rephrased.
I think the point that the member made is quite a valid point, because if we don't say here that we refer to the crime scene examiner rather than a crime scene examiner, we're actually excluding them for the rest of the time. So maybe let's change the A to a V. That would simply solve the issue. It's not a big issue, but it would simply solve the issue. The issue of correctional services, I want the drafters also to respond to that, because you supposedly had numerous discussions with correctional services, with health, with the DG forum, etc., on this issue. So help us. What is the situation in terms of correctional services? Because we don't want to pass a piece of legislation that's going to be a pipe dream. A pipe dream. Because it also means if there's not enough capacity, then we must make provision for it in terms of the transitional arrangements that SAS can go in and take those samples. So that's why we need honesty in terms of this thing. Can you give an indication what was the discussion around this?
The Department of Correctional Services was involved in most of our discussions on the bill. There was a Deputy Director General from them that was, we can give the name through to the Secretary as well. But the proposal actually came from their side in terms of their own setup to have a registered doctor or nurse taking this, and they were quite confident that they will be able to deal with this. Because, Chair, I think it relates more to the... I think initially there will be quite a huge backlog to start off with. But as things progress, it will actually change a lot. But it was a proposal from the Department of Correctional Services to have a... And I think it makes a lot of sense in terms of their setup, not to have any member just taking this type of sample. So I think there were a lot of reasons why they actually preferred a registered doctor or nurse to perform this function within their department.
Okay. No, unfortunately, I think we will include, and Committee Secretary, please make note of it, that if you get that name from Commissioner Jacobs, that we invite that person, because I'm not comfortable that they have the capacity. They might have one nurse at a correctional service facility. They might have one visiting doctor from time to time, and it might take forever to do that. I'm sorry, we've been told that you're ready to implement this as well, and we saw already that there are challenges. So it will be irresponsible of us going on without getting that input. So we will invite that person from correctional services, and you can indicate to that person that we want to know exactly how many medical staff that you have and at which facilities, etc. They must give us details around that. I think that would help a lot in this process. Members.
Yes. I just want to say that I support what the Honourable George said here, that we need the National Commissioner to be part of this discussion.
So we will definitely put such an invitation to the National Commissioner of Correctional Services to send either come a self-centre delegate in order to give us a full briefing on their capacity to deal with it. Well, in terms of the cost implication of this, who's going to carry the cost? Who's carrying the cost? I'm asking the question. Paying the cost.
Chair, when we discussed the implementation plan and those aspects that were covered or showcased in different departments, I remember the name of the DDD, Brigator. I just quite don't remember the surname, but we'll get a name and we can forward it. The plan that we presented last, I thought the colleagues would be bringing the plan as well so that they talk to the issues of those parts where they were in agreement from the professional services as to what type of costs will be handled by who. But from the discussion, the General had made it clear to us that it is our requirement. It is not catered for in their budget. So our budget must cater for all those. So although we have highlighted it in the plan, but we had acknowledged that the cost will be until there is a different decision covered from our budget.
That's fine. I mean, I just don't want us passing legislation that's going to have a financial implication on another department that they haven't budgeted for. But we need that clarity as well when they come, that we can get confirmation of this. Can we move on to the next part of it? You can continue.
Thank you, Chair. On page 7, paragraph G, by the addition of the following subsections, an authorized person may take a bodily sample only with the consent of the person from whom it is to be taken. B, if authorized to do so by a warrant issued under subsection 4, or C, if authorized to do so under section 36D. And 401.
I just want us to continue with the rest first. We spoke during the public hearing, sorry, Commissioner Jacobs, you took it this morning. We spoke during the public hearings, what type of these officers going to get this training? Is it going to be from a certain rank? Are we talking about student constables? What are we talking about? Because I think that is important as well. It's not fingerprints that you're taking. I personally would be the first one to say I want to take my own back also. My personal space is very important to me. And I mean, so will there be others? So can we get an indication? Because we refer here. People reference the Black Swan, any police official or member of the Independent Police Investigative Directorate. Let's forget about that, but they're going to take swaps mainly of police officers. But let's talk about the police officers going to take the Black Swan. Have you thought about who that police officer is going to be? What type of police officer are we talking about? And can you enlighten us about that so that we can see whether that doesn't need to be defined more specifically in that as well?
Thank you, Chair. I will answer the question also with part of the training that the portfolio normally asks in terms of how far has the staff gone into providing training of forensics within the basic training of police, also within the detectives. It is the understanding of staff that every police officer will be trained because it's going to be a task that goes on until the person is still in the remain operational within the environment. However, for implementation purposes, we have categorized the different types of police like we had presented in the previous plan. First, we will start with the branch commander, the cluster commander. We've got the map of how we are going to break that down so that those people get the priorities set. But the entire rollout will be the rollout for the entire detectives, the entire VCOP, the entire crime scene, the entire every other police person, as long as they are blowing appointed within the effort, reality of implementation kicks in. At the start, it will be brain commanders, cluster commanders, it will be those people that are dedicated even within the satellite areas or within the regions as it is captured within the training plan of the people that are to take the samples.
Honourable Mullah Bhatt, Honourable Joe.
Chairperson, from the flashing by Flower, that is now means at the beginning only the branch commanders and the cluster commanders will be allowed to take these samples.
Chair, no, not only
those. Wait. Further questions. Honourable Joe.
No, I also wanted to clarify when General Chase was speaking. I didn't understand there. Because at some stage, she includes everybody. You see, there was also a question, is there a specific rank? Because that's important. You see, the police in this country, especially the youngsters that come from the college, sometimes when they come out of that college, they're a little bit wise. That is why I'm saying, if you say now every police, are you saying even constables will just arrive from the training because they've got training? What does that mean?
You can respond to the two.
Thank you, Chair. The rank that we had looked at is rank from warrant officers upwards, because we acknowledge that there are those stations which is affected, particularly within the rural areas where there isn't any other higher rank than the warrant officers. The stuff is going towards it. But how we have mapped out, we have considered all the geographical locations and the setups in those environments, is what is the picture looking like. So it will be wearing officers upwards, and also acknowledge that those are the people with at least a bit of experience in the subs, more than 10 years or so, or 5 or above. Because then they will understand policy, they will understand all those dynamics. Those will be the people we consider first. Whether or not it is going to be the people from the colleges, we are also introducing it into the colleges. So I would want to acknowledge that our training is stepping up, Chairperson. So at some point in time, we'll be confident of every part of training that is given by staff. So we will really be confident that our police will be doing a good job in this.
If we say from the rank of warrant officer, why are we not specifying it in that? If we say that, is it going to be problematic?
Chair, I don't know if you want to do the rank also. It's not a problem that the rank can be included. But what about, should it happen that everybody has to be trained in time? I understood that the bill will be reviewed in 5 years. So if the rank needs to be included, really there are no issues. But I don't really see any particular problem. But I also don't see a problem including the rank either.
Honourable George, Honourable Mullabhatte.
General, I like you. You also said yourself that you are busy upgrading your training. And you said at some stage, the people come from the college will be what we all would like them to be. But you agree with us at any moment. That is not the situation. Why don't you specify the rank? Especially that this bill will be reviewed every 5 years. Probably by that 5 years, you've reached what you wanted, and then we can say safely that we can put all our personnel through constable and all that.
Honourable Mullah Bhatt.
Yes, this transition, how long is it going to take? 5, 10 years, what?
Staff will tell you 5 and then it takes 20.
Because we have a transitional period, on the transitional period, he has to have a position. Because we are talking about transitional period. Because in the transitional period, you assess what should be required. Therefore, I think let's go for the position at this point. Because we are talking about transitional period from now onwards. How long is it going to be when we finalize this? When we finalize the time of the bill, then we can say this is where the transition should stop, and then we implement everybody.
Honourable Mullah Bhatt. So I just want to warn that we don't necessarily put that thing in the definitions then, but then we do it in the transitional arrangements. Because if we put it in the definitions, then it limits us for life. But I also think this section can be better written. Because I think, you know, first of all, if you've got half a brain in the police arrest you and you know about DNA, I don't know, first thing I'm going to ask the police officer, show me that you've been trained to take the buckle swab. Is there going to be a certificate? Is it going to be on his appointment ID, etc., etc.? Because we're clear in the act that somebody else cannot take it. Now, if we're not going to do that, if there's not going to be a way that that person can prove also to the person who's being arrested or the person who's being taken a buckle swab as an exclusion sample, etc., it will be challenged in court. Because the act is clear. The act says that it must be done by a trained official. So if I'm a lawyer, a defense lawyer, and I go into court, and I've got half a suspicion that the person that's taken the buckle swab is not trained, I'm going to start by arguing that point. So should we not look at that section a bit more in detail? You know, first of all, I hate the thing that we're ending with the training. Reference to buckle samples, any trained police official, according to the Minister of Health training requirements, rather than ending with that sentence. Because now, let's be clear, we talk about any trained police official. But I do think we've got a bit of a challenge. We mustn't open gaps as well. And sorry, staff members have been trained for the last 15 years on the Domestic Violence Act. And we still see what the problems are around those. So we need to be realistic about it as well. So please, I do think we need to look at it again. Can we ask that you just look at how we can strengthen that section, keeping in mind the issues that we've raised now. Not saying that we put in a rank here, we can look at the ranks in the transitional arrangements, so that we don't bind our own hand going forward. Honourable Lombardi, Honourable Kulabar.
Thanks. What will distinguish this trained officer from the ordinary ones?
That's the point. That's the question I'm asking.
Will there be a specific data to can access, to check, or something? Thanks. The outer badge.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. From the identification part, we had not discussed whether it will be a badge or whether it will be any identifiable means, because when the police officer is trained, the SAP 96 gets re-updated. In fact, when you go to court, the court can ask any training of any member, whether or not you have that badge on. So they still have to say, is it valid? Well, to discover the aspects that have been asked. That's what we see all the time when we go to the court cases. But I thought when we do the operational issues, when we elevate it to the, or degrade it to the national instruction, perhaps those provisions could be contained there. When we discussed with the team, with also the legal officer, we really didn't come up in thinking of whether a person would be identifiable in a particular manner that they can take a sample. But if a person does take a sample, it should be a person who's qualified and trained to do so. So unless they should put up some ideas that we must have to go and consider as well, we can do that.
See, Commissioner Shazi, the problem is you're stretching the ideal situation. The person must have done the training. You know how many fingerprints you've got to send back because they're not being properly taken. You know that. I just think we must consider to be clear in the bill. Don't necessarily have to do it here in the definitions, maybe later on in the bill. Say that the person, the police official who takes the sample must, you know, identify himself or herself as being trained or whatever the case may be. And not leave it for national instructions. Our challenge with national instructions is that it has become suggestions. Police stations follow them as they please. Honourable Kulavona?
Yeah, I think if one found on the off chance that someone who's just been watching took a buckle sample because everyone else was busy, I think you're going to end up in a court challenge if they're unqualified. So I think that must be specified. I do think that handling the seniority issue in the transitional arrangements would be fine. But the one issue I just want to clarify, General Jacobs referred, I think, said something about men can take the samples from women at some stage. It was not in relation to children. Children, you were very clear. But just clarify that for me before I move on, because I don't want to hear that you're going to say men can take these things from women. It just can't be.
Commissioner Jacobs?
No, Chair, I said normally that it's the other way around. It's not gender sensitive. But Chair, I think we also indicated that we can address it in the bill to make double sure that it is addressed.
We can deal with it when we get to the actual taking of the sample. I don't think it's something that you need to do in the definition. So let's keep those thoughts for that. Can we then look at the insertion of the definition of authorized person? Of the following body sample, means any type of sample taken from person, including intimate and non-intimate samples, buccal samples. I don't think there's a problem there, members. Are we happy with that part of it? Are we happy with F, Roman 1, 2, and 2? Are we happy with E? Page 5E. Page 5E, quarantine sample, DNA, forensic DNA, forensic DNA profile, intimate sample.
Would section F2, 1-2, I'm just reading through this. There was reference to issues where South Africa might want to compare the DNA of a foreign person and can apply like that. Would that fall under that section? Because I don't see any reference to it.
I think what we're looking here at definition. So let's just look at the definitions first. So are we happy with the definition as it is? That's not there.
Yeah, it definitely is comparative search, but only in South Africa. That's why I raised it.
Five. Yeah. Could be more specific.
F, 1 and 2. Comparative search. The definition of comparative search. Comparing of all of these things against databases referred to under the SACS Act. I don't know if they refer to international databases in the Act.
Can you comment on that?
Thank you, Chair. I think the comparative search in this sense is the search of the database itself. The other provision relates to international cooperation. And there you will actually have a crime scene profile that you will communicate with another department in another country, and they will search for their database in respect of that. So, Chair, I think within this context, the reference is correct to say within South Africa.
Can I just ask you a question on Roman 2, F2? The chapter reference there, chapter 5A, is it not 5B?
Chapter 5B, there.
Can you correct that for us, please?
That thing is, Gerard Jacobs was talking, you restrict this thing to South Africa. What happens if somebody commits crime and is talking to South Africa and comes out of the country? You've got how would you compare if you restrict it only to South Africa?
I think the commissioner has indicated now in his answer that the part of the international agreements, and there will be a request then, and it will be run then again, but it will be run against the South African database. That's what he's saying here. So that's how I understood it. Even if the person is arrested abroad and somebody asks from that police, can you run this for us, they will then do it through the international agreements, through Interpol, etc. It will be then, and we don't have to make provision for it in the definitions. It covers.
For Mr. Madam Chair, that this international agreement covers every country.
Chair, normally it works on the basis of reciprocity, and international agreements which deal it like the same like with extradition. So it's not absolutely open, but Chair, I think there's also two levels. The one level is the investigative level, and the other one is in respect of the exchange of evidence before court. When it comes to evidence, of course there are more strict rules in terms of mutual legal assistance which countries must comply with. So I think there might be a slight difference between the two. But with evidence, there are very strict rules in terms of which countries you have agreements with, and even countries where you do not have agreements, there is a possibility that the President may agree to that.
We can't legislate for every possibility. That's also true. Can I just ask the next question on that same section, by an authorised person? Clarify that for us. Shouldn't it read by an authorised officer as defined in the definition? Because that is then refers to the head of the division dealing with DNA.
Thank you, Chair. We just picked it up now. So we corrected that and would have informed the committee on that. Chairperson, just on the same clause, the reference to Chapter 5B is only applicable in respect of paragraph Roman 2, where the reference should be 5B, because 5B refers to forensic, not the other one. Thank you.
That's why we asked the question. Okay. Yep.
Chair, I also wanted to point out in terms of the foreign and international relations, it contains in 15M, in 5B 15M. There's a whole paragraph on the exchange and the possession of that, so it's kind of.
We're coming to that, members. It's just saying that it's dealt with there in terms of it. Can I just ask, there's been some of the presentations that we've had said biological sample. I see we don't have it in our definitions, that we should refer to biological sample. Okay. Yeah. For instance, CA, body sample means any type of biological sample taken. Because otherwise, when we're back at the... You hear what I'm saying? There was a number of comments on it during the public hearings as well. CA on page 4 at the bottom. Bodily sample means any type of biological sample taken from a person.
Okay, I just want to understand from the technical point of view, what other sample can come out of it? Was it in this? I'm trying to just think now. Could there be a chemical sample?
It might be.
I'm only basing this because with the forensic evidence, it's very difficult. Now you have other evidence that can go. Our purpose is to fight crime. That does not necessarily mean now. That's just this reference to the body sample. No, we must redefine it out of the context of what the body sample is. Because the body sample is a body sample. It might lead, maybe not with the DNA evidence, but with the chemical evidence, maybe with the primary residue.
Yeah, okay, let's leave it in that case. We're just trying to cover also, members, the public comments that we did receive. Otherwise, people say we ignore the public comments as well. Can we look at page 60? Anything there? FH. Non-intimate sample means a buccal sample. Or the sample taken from nail, from a nail or from under the nail of a person. But can you can you leave it all missing there, obviously? Instead of the comma, shouldn't this be all?
No.
Yeah, no, that's not right. And then also, who's going to take these finger nail things?
During our previous discussion, we had defined land intimate to cover every sample that is land intimate. Normally, the fingers, the samples underneath the nails are crime samples, not reference samples, for the purposes of discussed during the presentation, in the first presentation. So, it is a police officer who is conducting a crime scene investigation because the body could just be a crime scene at that stage.
But then you, what we then say is that a non-intimate sample means a battle sample or a sample taken from a nail or from under the nail of a person, and any police officer or elected official will be justified to take it. Drained. Are we satisfied with that? Yeah, it's a consequential outcome to you, Honourable Poppy, I've seen you. The problem is that if you look again at B2, and you talk about training, you just refer to back of samples. You're not referring to the other ways of training, taking non-intimate samples. And maybe there the issue turns from with reference to non-intimate samples. Any police official or member? Not.
Correct as it is, because remember it almost created a confusion during the presentation. I think it was the only time the last time who said the nail samples can't be used as a reference sample because the nail samples can just as well be crime samples. So the training is part of the crime scene management training, it's not part of the background sample for reference collection. So it is correct as it contains.
I can take up this.
Explain to us again. I want to understand you properly.
Excuse me. The samples underneath the nail may be crime scene samples, not reference samples. Background samples are non-intimate samples, but they are used for reference purposes because they are taken directly from an individual for comparison with the sample that is obtained from a crime scene. There was a case of an example where it said if people would have fought, then you take samples underneath the nail. What you may find is a profile of that person with whom you fought, not necessarily your own. In that instance, it is not a reference sample, it is a crime sample. But for the purpose of a definition, it is non-intimate because people normally refuse when you have to take a sample from them. It falls within the category of non-intimate. So it is the non-intimate definition with no provision for a reference sample taking. Just as a definition.
Explain to us the difference from a nail and under a nail.
Under a nail is under the nail. On the nail it can be on top of the nail. From the nail. From a nail or from underneath the nail.
From
It can be a piece of a nail too, Chair. It could also be on top. It doesn't have to be underneath.
Okay. Are you sure this thing is correct?
Yeah, I'm sure because they're not using the samples from the nail or underneath the nail as reference samples. That can be a kind sample. Only reference samples that are taken as a backup sample, as the committee has discussed, are those that can be used as reference samples. As for the purposes of the definition, a sample that is taken which is not intimate, it can be anything that is not intimate.
Second part of that question is why are we limiting ourselves to tobacco samples? What about a hair sample?
It's just hair. How do I black out the hair? This crazy. Could it be pubic hair? Could it be literally hair? It's a religious factor. Remember with the human rights considerations during the engagements, there are particular religious groups that won't allow to showcase the hair. But in that instance, that's not the definition of the engagement with the Red Group General, because at the time of engagements, there were a number of warra that went out of there. But I agree with the hair also, but it was taken out on the basis of rights.
What is warra?
Members, the reason why we ask that question is because if we don't put it in here, you can never use it then. You're also now limiting yourself not to ever be able to use it as a reference sample.
But see, I agree. Hair is hair. Hair can be a reference sample. So I'm happy with hair.
No, please, please, please. I'm happy with hair. It's not addressing our problem. Where does it go in there? Because it's not in there. Honourable Poppy, Honourable George.
Thanks, Jefferson. That is, I'd like to find out from which part of the body will this blood be from. The blood sample, because it's been referred to there as intimate sample.
Honourable George, please order.
This blood, from which part of the body does it come from? If I'm fighting with somebody and something happens and that person happens to scratch me or my blood spills, coming from a cheek, is on that person, is that blood intimate?
Members, I think that's for clarity, Honourable, to me, it refers here to the sample that's been taken. So the reason why it refers to intimate is because there will be a needle put in your body by a doctor or nurse in your arm to draw blood. It's not going to be crime scene. It's not crime scene samples. It is actually from the suspect or from the ones that they want to exclude. And the reason why it refers to intimate is you don't want the police officer to take it. It's got to be a medical practitioner that puts the needle in your arm, not a police officer or IPED official. Honourable George?
I wanted to support you on the issue of the hair. You see, it is good to talk about the religious rights and all everything. But at the same time, once you get involved in other things that make you either suspected, you must understand that from the very onset, you have limited your rights. So there's no way that we can have what we call absolute rights in the country. It does not happen anyway.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to clarify in terms of the human rights, in terms of the name. That the department have a discussion about this. Because this thing of human rights arguing with bills that is affecting our rights. For example, as I'm in correctional stage, there are rights that is affecting people that they put that person in the prison. And you'll find that when we want to make the law to be tough, then the human rights will come and say, no, you don't have to put a uniform on this person because he's not a judge already. And now here we're talking about this symbol that is going to affect our people because of the changes of our law. And now we want to say we cannot use the symbol of the head because afraid of human rights. That's why I'm having this question, Chairperson. Did they have discussion with them? Because all of us need to protect this country. Thank you.
Yeah, I think what we need to do is FH, taking into consideration what the members just raised, but also taking consideration that we don't want to be limited only to blood swabs as non-intimate samples. What we need to do is we need to relook FH. Non-intimate samples means a buccal sample, and listen to your explanation, because it's not clear from the bill, Commissioner Shetty, or for reference purposes, a sample taken from a nail or from under the nail of the person, because that's what you've said, but that's not what the Act is saying or the bill is saying. So it needs to be clear. And if we want to include AA, you need to come back to us about the AA issue as well on that. So can I ask that if I'm asking it now, when we meet next meeting, you come back to us on FH, please, on this whole redraft of FH. It's either that or we split the two to say nail and then nail for reference purposes, but you also need to apply your mind around the issue. Can we have a brackets 5 to 11? Quarter past 11, we're back. And
page 7, then G, by the addition of the following subsections. 3, an authorized person may take a bodily sample only with the consent of the person from whom it is to be taken. B, if authorized to do so by a warrant issued under subsection 4, or C, if authorized to do so under section 36D. 4, a warrant contemplated in subsection 3B may be issued by a judge or a magistrate if it appears from written information given by the authorized person on oath for information that there are reasonable grounds for believing that A, any person from whom a bodily sample is to be taken has committed an offence referred to in Schedule 1 in the area of jurisdiction of that judge or magistrate, and B, the sample or the results of examination thereof will be of value in the investigation by excluding or including that person as a possible perpetrator of the offence. 5, any authorized person who, in terms of this chapter or in terms of any other law, takes a buccal sample from any person must do so, A, in a designated area deemed suitable for such purposes as determined by the departmental heads of police, justice and constitutional development or correctional services in their area of responsibility and subject to subsection 2. Also subject to the requirements of any national instruction made by the National Commissioner of Police Service, regulation made by the Minister of Police, or instruction made by the Commissioner of Correctional Services, and B, subject to any legal requirements pertaining to the disposal of the biomedical waste.
Okay, can we stop there? Can we just change the aircon because people are freezing in here?
Because
I am hot with none of cold. Members, let's look at that. Anything else on that in this section? Any questions, any comments? Commissioner Chazy?
The chair, does the BSG agree from the point of view of the chair discussing in terms of separating the paragraph in the order of critical when it reads an authorized person may take a bodily sample? We go back to read what a bodily sample is defined to say also includes non-intimate samples, which will then mean the crime, the nail, samples underneath the nail. I'm only reconfirming that breaking down the definition will assist a lot to clear.
But you guys didn't think about that before you came to the committee, yeah? Honourable George?
This A, with the concern of the person from whom we just do, what happens if it's bugger off, I don't know what happens.
Can someone respond to that? What happens if the person says no?
Yeah. I think the first one is the A part is where a person do consent, where he's not arrested, but he do consent. Well, secondly, in B, if authorized to do so by a warrant, we believe that once a person, once the person is authorized to take it in terms of the law, that sample can be taken, even if a degree of force might be necessary. Of course, there is. I think even with fingerprints, sometimes the fingerprints must be taken, or the acts say the fingerprints must be taken, and the person is not willing to do it, and then it is taken in any way. But I think, especially with this type of issue where, as it was said, that the person might even be given the possibility of taking it himself under supervision, we hope that situation won't happen, but in terms of section 36B, where the Act actually provides that the sample can be taken, we believe it must be taken.
Honourable George?
My question, I don't believe that an authorised person would just want to take a body sample unless there's a good reason. Now my question is, if now, according to this, if with the consent, assuming the person say, no, I know B ready for the warrant. You don't have a warrant now. The person says no now. And any delay might defeat whatever you wanted to do. So what happens by the time you come to the person's court and whatever? I'm just asking. The general Jacob's not helping me.
I think what Commissioner Jacobs said, that I don't know whether you've heard it, this is the voluntary part of it. If you look at 4A, again, it talks about the offence, the person that committed an offence. Am I correct? So A is where we say we want to take a sample because we want to exclude you from the crime scene. 4A talks about the person who has committed an offence. That person's got no choice in the matter. Am I correct? That person has to give, as with fingerprints. So that's the difference. 3A, B and C is speaking about all these different scenarios where it's for exclusion, it is for further investigation, it's not necessary the person who's committed the crime. 4A actually talks to that. Honourable,
if you're doing the investigation, let's say an officer, you're investigating a crime, do you need a concern to build up the case against a suspect? If you need a concern for anybody who is in the crime scene when you're investigating a crime, you won't be successful in pursuing the crime of yours. I think that's where Mr. Joy comes from. Because if you can't just come here and then ask for people to take the samples because we are not involved in any crime. But if there is a crime, then you ask for a concern, that means something else.
Can you try and clarify again, please?
Yeah, I think what we explained, and I think it was the same with the fingerprints, it was quite a lot of discussion on this. But there are circumstances where a group of people are involved and where the person can be excluded by means of an investigation like this. So when a person volunteers to give his DNA in order to be excluded, we can take the sample without a warrant. There might not be enough evidence to arrest that person because he's a group of people implicated in a investigation, but by giving his DNA he can be excluded. So it's to provide for that voluntary. We do not want to arrest someone. If someone is clearly might be excluded from the investigation, and we can do it without arresting the person. This is the avenue then to do it.
Remus, if I can remind you, there's a similar provision in the Firearms Control Act around this issue, where it said that, for instance, we use the example of a car stopped, I remember clearly, and there were six people in the car, that you can take the fingerprints of all six, and even if it's just one or two people that are in the end, the guilty parties, you can take, for exclusion purposes, you can take the fingerprints of that person, of those people in on that scene.
My issue, okay, here we go, we have people proffering their, you know, they've agreed, okay, yes, take a bottle from me in order to put me out of the hole, you know, I'm volunteering it, but there's nothing here that says they may do it themselves. So even if they're volunteering it, again, it seemed to me the instruction is some guy's going to have something in your mouth. They may then say, you know what, if you're going to do that, no, I'm not giving it to you. They won't. So it's not here. Is it perhaps referred to somewhere else?
Chair, I think if we address the issue as we discussed, in terms of how it must be taken and so on, I think automatically this will be addressed, because it will be addressed at the position of taking the sample. So I think that it's, at the moment it's not addressed, but we will definitely, we actually agree to look at the chair.
Anything else in this section, members? Okay, Chair, designated area, are we satisfied with that?
Chair, as I recall, we did have a problem with that, because if, for example, one wants to take, although a designated area could be anywhere, really, but if the definition of a designated area is in a building, in a station, somewhere in particular, and you're at a roadblock and wanting to take rifle samples, then it's...
But the Commissioner Jacobs also indicated with the roadblock you will have to have a warrant, etc., etc. So, see there now. Maybe can we take a 5-minute break, take tea, come back, so that we can at least have the tea and coffee while it's hot. I need to wake up. I want to understand if there's a legal reason for it. Why can't it be any person whom a bodily sample is to be taken as committed an offence referred to in Schedule 1, full stop.
Chair, I think it's a wider problem that we do have. Is it relates to the jurisdiction of the magistrate, which is restricted to the specific district for which the magistrate holds office. It actually is to some extent a problem with all warrants. When you apply for a warrant, you need to apply for a warrant in the district where the person is.
Where the person is or where the crime has been committed?
Where the crime was committed, sorry.
Then we've got a problem. Now the person is in Cape Town and he's committed a crime in Gauteng, gets caught in Cape Town. Then what?
Practically, we need to understand.
I'm waiting.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to the jurisdiction, it's a consideration, it's a factor. When a person has committed an offence, so to link the crime that's committed and in order to authorise the warrant, there must be jurisdiction for the presiding officer before he can authorise the issuing of the warrant. So jurisdiction is the place where the crime is committed and where the person is. What is the requirement that must be taken into account for the issuing of a warrant?
Yeah, that's now a judicial answer that I got. Still not addressing the practical problem. Explain to us practically what will happen. The person has committed the crime content against caught in Cape Town. What practically will now happen? Such will now say, no, it's too much trouble, and then let the guy go, or chase him until he gets into Gauteng, and then we arrest him again. Practically what are we talking about?
Chair, I believe the person can be arrested where he is, but where the warrant is issued is when you have to search for the person, etc. When it is a Schedule 1 offence, you can in any event arrest the person without a warrant. So, but there are instances where you need to issue the warrant, you have to search for the person, etc. Then you need to go to the magistrate of the district where the offence has allegedly been committed.
Commissioner Rekerts, with all due respect, you guys are not answering our question. Practically answer the example that we've given. The person is now arrested in Cape Town. The crime was committed with or without warrant, irrelevant. The person has been arrested. You want a DNA from that person. Practically, what's going to happen?
The DNA can be taken where the person is being arrested. At the police station, where he is taken to the police station, the DNA can be taken there.
Why do we need this?
There are instances, Chair, as I've said, that you do not know where the accused is, etc. You need to issue a warrant so that the search for the person can continue and that he can be arrested once he's been found.
What happens if that person refuses there? What happens if you arrest him in Cape Town outside the jurisdiction and this person says, no, thank you very much, I'm not going to... You're not going to take my warrant. Yes. What happens? The way I understand it is, if a crime was committed in Gauteng and the person is in Cape Town, and I've got information that he's in Cape Town, I can get a warrant to do it in Cape Town from a judge in Cape Town and not from a judge in Gauteng. That's how I understand it.
Yeah, I think we need clarity on this business of within the jurisdiction, can it be taken with a warrant in another province? That does not what it says here. And also this business of with the consent of the person from whom it is to be taken. I mean, if any self-respecting criminal is going to say, no thanks, I don't give my consent. So what is stage two? What authority will they have to
forcibly take one, or did they just pull hair out of his head? I don't know.
Members, you must remember what we discussed just before tea. The A refers to executions, a group, etc. The B, the person doesn't have to give consent. This part that we talk about doesn't have to give consent. But the point is, what we want to know is why we need A. Yeah. Why do we need within the area of jurisdiction of that church?
Yeah.
I've explained why, but they're not answering the practical issue about it.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try again. I think what Commissioner Jacobs was saying is that you can be arrested anywhere, basically. But when it comes to the taking of a sample, a buccal sample, you must have a warrant, Chair, for taking of the sample. So where a warrant is issued, the warrant must be issued in respect of where that person is, where that person will be taken after his arrest. So that is how I understand it, in order to assist. Thank you,
that's not what the ball says. The ball says if you've committed a Schedule 1 offence and you're arrested, a buccal sample must be taken. It doesn't say you need a warrant. So why do we need a warrant here again?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to take the committee back to the application. We require the warrant. Where we say that the warrant is required for a buccal sample. That is... What is it? Do you want to find the reference, Chair, quickly?
Is a warrant needed to take fingerprints? So why is a warrant needed to take a buccal sample? It's the same thing. It is a modern-day version of a fingerprint. I'm failing to understand this.
But that's exactly my point. It's not needed when you arrest a person. So I don't understand why it's here.
Surely a warrant is only needed if you have a suspect elsewhere and you think it may be, and it's almost a search type thing to try and match up.
Yeah.
Then one is needed. But not if I've
yeah.
got him with as an ex-murderer, I can just take it, like his fingerprints.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. It's not needed. A warrant is not needed when the person is arrested, for instance.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's not applicable. Chair, maybe you can look at this as well and
you know what, there's too many things that we need to look at, and that worries me. It worries me about the quality of legislation that comes before us. You need a warrant under 36E, correct? This is not referring to 36E though, is it?
You
need a warrant. 36D, you don't need a warrant.
Yeah.
So why do we have a year?
Okay, I also am a little bit lost, but I see 4A referring to 3B. Where did that subparagraph, subsection 4? This one, the top one, talks to a body assembly which may be taken upon consent. In that instance, where a person does not want to give consent, then they would want to hear a warrant. But this is not in the Schedule 1, like I agree with you. When you go to 4, it reads, a warrant contemplated in subsection 3B may be issued and then it goes. But I also agree that the rest of schedule, when it says to schedule 1, it now missed the essence of 4.
Okay. Is your part of it, please. Clean up that part of it. Commissioner Jacobs, can I ask you, please explain to us clearly, without any ambiguity, when do you need a warrant to take the DNA sample? When do you not need a warrant?
Chair, first I want to say that the with the certification of the bill, that was a part that was added right at the end. But I agree totally, when you are arrested in respect of a Schedule 1 offence, a warrant is not required. I think that's the bottom line. And if you issue a warrant for the arrest of a person, once he's been arrested, you will in any event be able to take the sample. So I think we need to revisit the inclusion there of warrant. I agree with that, Jenny.
Let us also remember, I can't refer to the exact section, but it says also in the book, or any other offence. So it's not even limited to Schedule 1 offences.
Yeah.
So this thing is very, very confusing. And I have very little sympathy at what point it was put into the legislation or not. Then blame the state law advisors for putting it in.
Chair, we'll look at it from our perspective, from the concerns raised now. But what we have considered also the privacy issues with regard to the taking of a bubble sample, and also at what stage. So we will address the concern raised by the committee.
I with all due respect, with the members quite rightly said this is as a fingerprint. And the point is that we've dealt with the privacy issues in terms of the retention, etc., sample being destroyed, whatever else. And I do not want the state law advisors to go and look at it on their own. I want one opinion coming back from you guys. You sort each other out and come back with one opinion understanding this. Otherwise, you're wasting our time, quite frankly. And we don't have time.
Just to fill me in, I understand we're dealing with here Schedule 1 particularly. Are we now, because of the initial pressure on the labs, have we determined that only Schedule 1's DNA will be taken for, or for any crime, or for certain or other groups? Has there been a discussion around that?
We're still coming to that point, but as it currently reads, it makes provision for any other offence as well. Such will prioritize, obviously, Schedule 1 offences. But if they've got reason enough to believe that they've arrested a person for housebreaking or for whatever else, shoplifting, and they've got reason to believe that person is also, they're looking for that person for a murder, they've got the leeway to take that person's DNA then. Discretion to take that person's DNA at that point in time. So it is possible. But we will get to that point. We haven't been. It's coming. It's not ready yet. But that's why I want them to have clarity on this. Because as it is currently, it's very, very confusing. B. 5, are we happy? Okay,
then
carry on, please.
Thank you, Chair. Section 36B, I'm going to get to that. That is the issue relating to fingerprints up to page 14, Chair. And there we have paragraph E at the top. The National Commissioner must destroy the fingerprints of a child, and then insertion of sections 36D and 36E in Act 51 of 1977. The following sections are hereby inserted in the Criminal Procedure Act after Section 36C. Powers in respect of buccal samples and body samples, 36D1. Subject to Section 36A5, an authorized person shall take a buccal sample or shall cause the taking of any other bodily sample by a registered medical practitioner or registered nurse of any A person arrested for any offence referred to in Schedule 1. And I think, Chief, is what you explained right now, there's firstly an obligation to take DNA, and that is the part dealt with in Clause 1. B, any person released on bail in respect of any offence referred to in Schedule 1, if a buccal sample or a bodily sample of that person was not taken upon his or her arrest. See, a person upon whom a summons has been served in respect of any offence referred to Schedule 1. D, person whose name appears on the National Register for Sex Offenders. And E, a person convicted by a court in respect of any offence which the minister has, by notice in the Gazette, declared to be an offence for the purposes of this section, provided that bodily samples, with the exception of bottle samples, shall only be taken by a medical practitioner or registered nurse. Sub 2, subject to section 36A5, an authorized person may take a buccal sample or may cause the taking of any other body sample by a registered medical practitioner or registered nurse of any person arrested in respect of any offence, of a person released on bail in respect of any offence, if a buccal sample or bodily sample was not taken upon his or her arrest. And C, a person upon whom a summons has been served in respect of any offence. D, a person convicted by a court in respect of any offence which the minister has by notice in the Gazette declared to be an offence for the purposes of this subsection, provided that bodily samples, with the exception of buccal samples, shall only be taken by a registered medical practitioner or registered nurse. 3, an authorized person must immediately finish every bodily sample taken under subsections 1 or 2 to the authorized officer, who shall carry out the forensic DNA analysis on every such sample in terms of Chapter 5B of the South African Police Service Act. 4, subject to Section 36A5, nothing in this chapter shall prohibit an authorized person from retaking a buccal sample from any person referred to in subsection 1 or 2 if a buccal sample taken from him or her was either not suitable for DNA analysis or insufficient, or B, a registered medical practitioner or registered nurse from taking a bodily sample taken from any person referred to in subsection 1 or 2 if the bodily sample taken from him or her was either not suitable for DNA analysis or insufficient. Subsection 5, the forensic DNA profile derived from bodily samples taken under any power conferred by this section may be used to conduct a comparative search.
Let's look at this section, please. Can I just say, if we can start. You start off in 2, 36C2, to say, such as to say, an authorized person may take a buccal sample by a course to take of any other bodily sample by a registered medical practitioner or registered nurse of any, and then you continue. Then you repeat it again, provided that bodily samples are. So it's unnecessary to repeat it again. Alter D. Either the first one or the last one, but not both. Honourable Lebonak, will you just wait that I acknowledge you before you start speaking? Please continue.
The first section, 36D, says an authorised person shall take. Then we go down and it says in 2, an authorised person may take. Now there's a very great difference between shall and may.
That's correct, because that's exactly what we talked about now previously. And I think the shall must take a change to must. An authorized person must take. The shall must change to must. For Schedule 1 offences, because the first one speaks about Schedule 1 offences, 36D.
Chairperson, if I can just, I agree with you for the word must. I think you will remember when we dealt with the fingerprints legislation as well. We stayed with the style of the Act. The new drafting style is to use must instead of shall. But you'll remember that with the fingerprints, we remained with the shall in terms of the style of the rest of the Act, yeah.
Well, we're reviewing the rest of the Act in any case soon. So let's use must, please. Let's be clear in terms of what we're saying. I think it will also make the bill more understandable. Then when we talk about the section that Honourable Kulabana is talking about, that's any offence other than a Schedule 1 offence. Am I correct? So that gives them the opportunity to take from any other offence. And once they're up and running and fully through the transitional period, they might want to then issue instruction to say, of all suspects. But this makes it possible. Am I correct?
That's correct, Jeff.
Philip, aren't you satisfied with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Which minister are we referring to here?
This is an amendment to the Criminal Procedure Act, so the Minister is the Minister of Justice, Chair.
Can we make sure that that actually reflects in the overall bill?
when we talk about definitions, because there's also reference to the Minister of Police. So we need to be clear. The issue of the mast. Can you just comment on the issue that I've read around the repetition of the wording? If I can help you, after E, you start off by two by saying, subject to section 36A(5), an authorized person may take a battle sample or may cause the taking of any other body sample by a registered medical practitioner or registered nurse of any. Then you continue until D. Then you again say, provided that bodily samples with the excision of battle samples is a repetition. So one of these need to be removed. Are you on par with what you're saying there? So one of them needs to be removed. Which one do you suggest we remove, the first or the last one?
I suggest last one. Okay.
So members we remove, provided that on page 15, between D and 3, we remove provided that bodily samples, we remove that section. There is, Commissioner Shedd, if I'm correct, there is a reference in the bill on when you want the samples from correctional services. Am I correct?
Yes, in the Act Chapter 5, I think.
Yeah. Why here do we not put it in 2 or 3 years as well? It shouldn't be. The point is, I don't know, I think today you weren't here. The point is, it shouldn't be left open for the police to bring those samples to the laboratory, and by national instruction it says 5 days or 40 days or a month, whatever it says. But we are instructive to another department. That same time of strictness should be reflected in terms of police officers as well. So why don't we put a time frame in here as well? Because you know what's going to happen. Police stations are going to sit with those samples, and then you're going to scream at them to send it, and then you're going to get 100 on one day. So why don't we have a clear thing? We're not being prescriptive, but you must be, from a laboratory point of view, also give us an indication of what would be a breakdown.
It could, because consider it under 6E, but I don't know about sample, but perhaps look at the most relevant area, but I agree.
It says here, 3 says an authorized person must immediately finish.
Oh, yeah.
What is that immediately?
Yeah.
Okay. Can we also that be brought in line, please?
Yeah.
In this section, members, that we want to take up?
And I haven't seen it, a section here that refers to intimate samples that should be taken in private or in a closed room or not with the whole, not open to the public, as it were. I'm not sure. I haven't seen it.
I think it speaks to the prescribed way.
The designated area, Jeff.
But are we talking intimate samples? Are we satisfied with the way it's worded?
Chair, of course, the intimate samples can only be taken by a registered doctor or registered nurse.
Where?
I agree, Chair, but I mean, it's, There's also ethics, etc., relating to doctors and nurses, which they must comply with, and I think that would include issues like privacy as well.
Now, we agree with you, but you all remember the submission that we got from Jessie Ford and her experience, what she is like. That was by a medical practitioner.
In all due respect, Chair, this is where we can prevent that ever happening again, what happened to her. No, just some man walks up and says, sure, in front of him. No place, no privacy. You know, anyone could have walked into that room and seen her lying there stark naked. I mean, there was nothing for her. So that is what we're looking for. With all due respect, if you think that might be the case, we perhaps need a little more reassurance in that.
Maybe when we get to 366 and the D, we might want to put in the in a prescribed manner and place. And then we can leave it to the Department of Health in terms of the ethics and the detail that should be there.
In terms of the submissions made, I totally agree that that type of prevention is necessary. In terms of
can I also ask that you look at the possibility of the development of the DNA profile? Are we going to put a time frame to that, from the sample to the profile? So what we're saying is we want to legislate for your backlogs.
You know, body sample is our loose-cut sample. That's why it also contains somewhere they have to say that there is a necessity for retaking if the sample is not getting a profile. As soon as you begin to do that, because the enzymes, the hormones, chemicals, and so forth. For practical purposes, I'm not sure if we want to do this. It's been 7 days, maybe 10. I'm not sure what is the minimum. We can look into that, see if it's an acceptable range. Otherwise, it'll have to take the whole time around time. And then for the submission, but we can look into that.
I think you need to look into it. I think you need to look into it because it's also no use that we pass this legislation that we make above all miracles get such to send the stuff through to you in time and then it gets locked down by not creating profiles at the laboratories. It can be a turnaround time, it can be a fair amount of time. We're not saying that it must be a 24-hour period or whatever the case may be. But it also impacts on the investigation, so obviously we want to see a quick turnaround time.
Thanks, my quick download is telling me that there are different types of samples, the scheduled ones and the normal ones, and the capacity limitations and the number of them. It may be a little bit of a dance, given that there's prioritization. If there's a blanket thing that says this will be the turnaround for all samples, it might be hectic. I think that's why there's a conservative approach from all international forensic science. It's never been that. It'll be it's a red alert for them. I would rather
have a look at it and come back to us.
Yeah.
Come back to us with a suggestion. And on it, we will take that in consideration as well. But I do believe we're putting pressure now on correctional services. We're putting pressure on police stations. Somehow we need to keep the laboratory responsible for creating that sample within a fair period of time as well. Can we continue with 6, please?
Thank you, Jay. 6A, subject to paragraph B, any forensic DNA profile derived from such sample taken under any power conferred by this section shall only be used, 1, for purposes related to the detection of crime, 2, for purposes related to the investigation of an offence, 3, for purposes related to the conducting of a prosecution, 4, in the identification of unidentified human remains, or 5, in the identification of missing persons. B, the forensic profile derived from bodily samples taken under any power conferred by this session must be retained on or expunged from the NFDD in accordance with the provisions of Chapter B of the South African Police Service Act. C, any person who uses or allows the use of a bodily sample for any forensic DNA profile derived from such sample for any purpose other than as contemplated in paragraph A, is guilty of an offence and liable on conviction to a fine and imprisonment for a period not exceeding 15 years. D. Intimate samples may only be taken by a registered medical practitioner or registered nurse. 7. Subject to subsection 6A and D, the head of the correctional center or remand detention facility in which the person was or is incarcerated or his or her to delegate must ensure that the buccal sample or bodily sample is taken of any person who is serving a sentence of imprisonment for any offense on admission to a correctional center or remand detention facility or before the release of such person from the correctional center or remand detention facility if it had not already been taken upon his or her arrest.
Okay. Something for us, please. Okay, first comment D, remember now that we put a within a designated area or as determined by the Department of Health, so that we deal with the ethics part of that. I'll come back to the department now. I think they can hang on. Anything else in the section? Members, before I allow them to respond. Anything, Honourable Mutui, Honourable Kulavan?
Thanks, Mike, quite eloquent. C. The last sentence there is guilty of an offence and liable on conviction to a fine. I would like to find out if a fine is in monetary terms, and if it's in monetary terms, how much would it be, but it would depend on how we feel. The others, like you have seen in when we visited some police stations, you'd find some people being given a deal of 200 rand, the others of 1,000 rand, where there is no uniformity. So I'd like to find out if that fine is in monetary terms, how much would it be, actually? Is it a fixed amount?
Honourable Kurt, why not?
Okay,
can I just ask, why are we giving the option of a fine here? Why are we giving the option of a fine? This is a very serious offense. I don't think we should be giving an option here. Department, Sullivan, first. Just for the department response, Honourable Joel?
Madam Chair, just my question. Can I get the age, what would be, which circumstances would somebody use these body samples? Because then I want to, before I determine whether it's going to be final.
They sell it to your insurance company. And your insurance company see, no, you've got a certain illness that you don't know about yet, and therefore we're not going to give you insurance. That's one example. So it's very serious crimes that they can commit with this, and there's big money to be made out of it as well. Make no mistake.
I think we must remember that a lot of the issues raised when we first put this bill, before we set the bill, when we first put it on the table, were by people who were fearful of profiling, which is done by insurance companies and others who say, that man, his DNA is on this, he's going to drop dead when he turns 76, therefore we won't get an insurance, etc. So if people are selling this, and they will be paid a fortune by insurance companies to get that information, it is an extremely serious crime. So I agree, pick it up, jail.
To give you a very good example, for instance, your DNA would clearly show you're a troublemaker and you won't get any political votes to extend you. Members, on a more serious note, I saw and from the state law advisors and I wanted the department to respond, but I also think under 6.1 to 5, the question of using it for exoneration purposes
have come up during the public hearings as well, and this might be the place if we want to include a Roman 6. Because as you quite rightly said last week, that's one of the biggest use of it in other countries, is that people actually can prove that they have not committed the crime.
Thank
you. So I just first before Commissioner Jacobs, say the word back as you had China.
No,
no longer. Okay.
It says here that, okay, you go to jail if you allow it, that sample to be used for any other purpose than contemplated in paragraph A. So we go back to A, and that any person arrested for any offence should go to in a schedule. What? Is that the paragraph A we're referring to? What is paragraph A?
6A.
Detection of crime.
Okay.
It's on top.
It's crime issue.
Yeah.
Now, what if that DNA is being used to identify a body? But this particular phrase is...
It's just on top of it. Just on top of it. Purpose of, one says purposes related to detection of crime. Two says purposes related to investigation of offence. Conducting of a prosecution, identification of human remains, identification of missing purpose. And now we're suggesting also for exoneration purposes.
I don't necessarily agree with the exoneration part of it. Just for a great purpose. If it is the case, we say for exoneration purposes, then we should also put in for determination of guilt purposes. Because my argument is at 2, at 6A2, for the purpose related to the investigation of a crime, which outcome can either be a guilt or an exoneration. So we can look at the one part and not the other one. It is one of those outcomes. It is true, but the outcome may not be subjective to say you use it as for this intended purpose. But it can be an outcome of a report that says the person is either guilty or is not guilty. But DNA hasn't played a role.
Commissioner Shazi, yes, but now you're going to take DNA in correctional services facility. There's a guy there that's been saying for 14 years while he's doing jail time, he's been saying, I'm not guilty, I did not commit this crime. Now we're taking DNA. And he can actually now prove that he didn't commit the crime. So that's the exoneration that we are speaking about. Because if we want to use this for the one, we must be able to use it for the other as well. And maybe the same lawyer advisors can advise us whether the fee refers to conducting of a prosecution and whether we can't have put there all defence.
Prosecution basically refers to the whole case being placed before the court and being tried before the court. So that includes all facets of the case, basically, defence and the charge being laid before the court for consideration, basically, by the prosecution. So in my view, it is sufficient as it is.
But it's not referring to defence.
Conducting a prosecution, the whole thing about conducting the prosecution, basically, that person will be tried before a court. And a court must adhere to the other, to the defence as well. So it includes the defence as well.
But what about the practical example that we've just given you? 50 years imprisonment, he's been saying all along, I'm not guilty, DNA wasn't taking at the time, he's made, now take his DNA, they can actually prove now that he has not been caught.
Thank you, Chair. In that regard, there will probably be an appeal in respect of the person that's been found guilty, and should evidence then, the case will probably be opened, and that will be a ground for appeal, or the case can be reopened for that matter.
Honourable George.
Madam Chair, I was thinking about this taking away of the fine. I'm not sure. I think we're that's why I was asking which offences, because the offences can vary. There might be offence, yes, that warrant that there must be a fine. Why don't we leave it to the prosecution? At some stage, I think 7 or 8 years back, there was a complaint from the judiciary about the where the parliament is moving to an area which is not that is now trying to impose, and that's not our area. I think on this issue, let's leave it to the court. If the court believes that they must be fine, I don't believe we should say 15 years, no fine. I'm worried about that, I'm not worried.
It's a maximum of 15 years. So the court can still say a year or 2 years, but the problem is that you will get police officers who will be willing to sell these stuff. You will get it. And it's going to impact on people's lives. And we must apply our minds how serious we feel about the abuse of DNA. But we can have that discussion. Let's look at the problems that we have currently. The issue, Honourable Koolabaas, I'm coming to you. I want to remind the state law advisor that Canada advised, when we were there, to put in the whole issue about exoneration. Simply because it's a good thing to have it there as well. And I can't see the harm that it can do.
Thank you. I don't have a problem putting it in, Chair, but with regard to the prosecution, for prosecution purposes relating to the conducting of a prosecution, the defense will have access to any DNA profile that the prosecutor that the prosecution will put forward in a court, basically, in any event. So in my view, the defense will have access, and if we have the exoneration purpose as another category, that's also fine. Thank you.
Honourable Koolabaas, on it?
Yeah, I don't see here where it's covered. For example, when we went into the laboratories, the two laboratories overseas, we gave... Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt. When we were overseas, we gave samples voluntarily so that it was on a six-month database so that if our DNA popped up anywhere on the slide, it could automatically be turned up. That is not covered. That is not covered here. I've read them about five times. I don't see where it's covered, and it's a voluntary giving of DNA it's got a special database name. But it's a volunteer database. It's not covered here, which would mean that volunteer base would be illegal, according to this list. And I'm just thinking that we may perhaps want to give the board some discretion to add to this list in the light of future developments as needed. Because if we have by determining them, that's the closed list. We can't add anything on or take anything off. It's there. And I'm just very fearful that we in our scientific ignorance may miss one, and then we live to regret it. So giving the board perhaps the right to add to that list may be an out there.
Just remember, the board can't make legislation. The board cannot make legislation. Only the legislator can make legislation. The board can suggest to Parliament. And we've already said previously that we want to make sure that there's 3-year reviews after the 5-year review, every 3 years. And then it can come back to us and say, we want to include another section. But to respond to the part on the volunteer database, I'll come back to you.
Thank you. Member Chair, in terms of clause 15Q, the profiles 15Q and this is fine. Just find the page number. Yeah. On the attention, page 49.
Because let's work from the, and can I ask the team to work from this?
Yeah,
let's ask you. 52, page 49.
Just find the reference here. We provide for the expungement within 3 months of the profile where it's been volunteered. That is in C. I can see if a volunteer gives consent, that's on page 50. Paragraph C. If a volunteer gives consent that his or her forensic DNA profile be retained on the database, it may be retained until such time that a request is made in terms of this act
that such roll file be expunged, in which case the forensic DNA profile must be expunged within 3 months after receipt of such a written request.
You see, now, to me, that contradicts us, because this one is saying that DNA samples shall only be used in these terms, and yet later on that they can be used as a volunteer database. That's not this
discussion. No, I think you must read it. It says subject paragraph B, a forensic DNA profile derived from such sample. It's referring specifically to gun samples. It's not referring to your volunteer samples. It's not referring to your other samples. It's referring to your gun samples. It's not referring to those, because it refers back to what we said previously. It's very clearly derived from such sample. Subject to paragraph B, any forensic DNA profile derived from such sample. So it speaks to the sample that we've dealt with up to now. It's not speaking to the voluntary samples, etc., etc.
Perhaps maybe let us to the understanding of the volunteer sample. I get a sense that it's not assumed, because if for example, as we used before, we went for a T-Bank, a group of people are suspected to have committed the crime, then we request them to volunteer a sample. It's going to be used for criminal purposes. When you search against that, although they are loaded in the volunteer index, it's for the specific reason in which it is taken. If it is taken voluntarily, if they are consumable as a company, however, the purpose is determined there for conducting a prosecution. Maybe that this was a contaminant, whatever, but it is in that case during a trial. So volunteer index includes all those. So when you search against all those indices in the database, you still search against the volunteer index, but for those purposes as determined. A person may say, you will put in my samples. It doesn't say, you will only search when it comes to this part. It means you can search as long as you are still in the database. So I just wanted to bring a little bit of clarity to the volunteer index.
I think we understand that. The point is the purposes for which it can be used are only these. That's the purpose for which it can be used. And we are we in agreement to say that we put in exoneration as a sixth one? Okay. Yes?
Jay, I'm not talking about exoneration. Exoneration is fine.
I'm asking you when you're talking about exoneration. I was referring to the state law advisors now when I said yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. This was called a mental illness advisor. Chairperson, I just wanted to go back to the issue of the pitch for the defense purposes. Contrary to what the state law advisors say, I'm of the view that if the prosecution don't put it before the court, then what will be available to the defense to get to have it be used for that purposes? So I would propose that you add, in addition to prosecution as well as for defense purposes.
Yes.
Because if the prosecution don't put it before the court, then the defense don't have access to it.
Even-handedness.
Thank you.
Honorable, I'm coming back to you. Honorable Lefetu, Honorable George.
Thanks, Chair. Let me also add to this issue of exoneration. You see, the guilty never say they are guilty. And at some stage, we are going to render our judiciary useless.
Members, order please. If you listen to one meeting, you will hear. Please.
At some stage, we are going to render judiciary system useless. Because everybody is always, when I defend myself, I will always say, that I'm not guilty. I'm going to die saying I'm not guilty. But what about the rights of the victims? It's a very sensitive issue as far as I'm concerned. I think this must be debated, as you said,
But we also don't want to see innocent people locked up. That's the other side of the story. We don't want to see, because there's no justice done for the victim if it's an innocent person serving the time either. And that's what we're saying. And I think to agree with Parliament's law advisor.
that it needs to be an even-handed approach. We need to look at prosecution and defense, but we also need to look at exoneration purposes. Now it's becoming two different issues, the way it is. Honorable George.
The way General Shazley was explaining this voluntary need, it is classically my argument, but about that one with my patents. You see, because I'm worried about that. You see, I had exactly the same thing. Assuming, but I don't want that number. Assuming we're sitting here in a tea, we were drinking tea, this man commits crime, he lands and meets with us, and we say we must volunteer, and he, the one who made culprit, refuses. Say, no, I'm not going to keep it. That's why I think we must look at that thing, that contempt. What do we do when he refuses? We if innocent, we know we've done nothing. We say, well, fine. Take our sample. He's very tight, who knows? Says, because there's this concern. He says, no, I'm not doing it. So it means the whole exercise is lost because the very person who was supposed to be, as I'm saying, well, we must talk about it, Madam Chair.
Let me get a warrant for you, sample. Simple as that. Get a warrant. I hear what you say. I think we need to look at it, but I don't think there is a problem. We'll just be clear on it. Susan?
Thanks, Chair. I would like to go back to the 6A in terms of the inclusion of number 6 is there. But I'm referring to 2, number 4 and number 5. These are the matters which, Chair, we said in the debate or in the discussions we'll talk about. Identifications of unidentified human remains as well as the identifications of missing persons, yes. This in line with familiar searches. Now, in terms of the crime investigation, and the question is posed to me, how do you identify an unidentified human remain with the forensic database unless you conduct a familiar search? Because those are where it is coming from. As I was saying earlier on to the person, I don't say exoneration in number 6, I understand the 6, but I wanted to say, if you review the number 2, number 4 and 5, it may be that you are left with 4 issues if you are talking in line of familiar searches and get an understanding. I was requested to again go back to discuss the issues on familiar searching related to the tea issues. I wonder if the chairperson wants to talk to these two items or what is the suggestion.
You know what, I'm never going to give you an opportunity to speak again. You're just adding to confusion. Please, we will get to that point. Let us look at what we have here. Are we satisfied that we have those 5? We include defense. And on 2, and we include exoneration. And if the department have a serious problem with that, you come back to us with arguments around it. Not saying we wish not to include. Arguments around it. Convincing arguments. Defense on prosecution and defense, and the 3, Roman 3, and then 6, exoneration. Are we satisfied with 7 minutes?
Correctional service detention center, even though they're released now, you can go and get their DNA. I just don't see that as...
Just badly written. Can we also get clarity on that something it needs to be cleaned up? Because surely you don't expect correctional services to go back to people that
that was in correctional services. It is currently. It is currently. So the wards need to be removed. But also, it's a question that comes to mind. A remand detention facility. The person has not been sentenced yet. Now, we made a provision for Schedule 1 offences. So I have no problem that people who are locked up for Schedule 1 offences, that you take their DNA in remand facilities. But then at the same time, we're arguing because of capacity issues, let's not include necessarily all offences at this stage. Why then would we include people in remand facilities that have committed offences other than Schedule 1 offences? Doesn't make sense.
The last sentence says, if it had not already been taken upon his or her arrest. So presumably they already have it, and if they've somehow slipped it, and they should have it, the case which is put in there, they're saying they can now get, it's a very bizarre sentence already.
The fact of the matter is that people in remand facilities have been there for 5 years. So we're going to get people in remand facilities that most of them, everybody in correctional services currently, DNA has not been taken. Let's take for a given. Remand or no remand. Why do we want to take the DNA of everybody in a remand detention facility? Or do we want to be specific again that it must be taken off Schedule 1 offences?
I thought one of the problems we have in South Africa is that because of the DNA problems, you find that the police are going up and down looking for somebody who is already in a remand center. And I thought, but in my view, by taking everybody who is in remand, it makes the job of the police know that no, this person is already inside, it's no help going to Kaish and look for him.
Then the same argument should be made for people currently in police cells. Because there are people, as you well know, and as I well know, even though they should not be there longer than 48 hours, who are there for 5 or 6 years. It's a capacity issue as well. That's what I want to know from the side of staffs and from the laboratory side. What do we want here? And it's a must. It's not a maybe, it's a must in the bill. Can we get clarity, please?
Chair, I think this must have also added by the DG there. From Correctional Service, Madam Lita, I wonder if Rothman, yes, giving the name already. For the same reasons that Honorable George has highlighted, in terms of people that have been serving are in there. So if the question is perhaps in food staff, I would rather suggest that perhaps that may be included, but capacity issues are anyway already an issue.
I don't like this response if it's anyway already an issue. We're going to come down on you like a ton of bricks. Like a ton of bricks. When you've got a backlog in terms of DNA. Like a ton of bricks. We need to be clear what we want, members. And I'm not sure that the drafters are clear on what they want. Because you can't say to me that the people that SAFs are looking for are only the remand centers and correctional services. They must not leave your own damn cells. Because we know that your systems is not up and running. So either we do it with everybody, or we don't do it.
Can we just have some input here? Why? All right, you're saying the section was added by correctional services. Are they here today? Anybody? So we don't have anybody.
Ms. Kulabon, if we get it here, we will call them
I thought there might be someone here from there. Do you have any idea why it was that they could take the sample from anybody who was in correctional services or is currently? Why would they have said that? I mean, there must be thinking behind it. Should I answer?
Well, yes.
Yeah.
When we discussed the taking of samples, also in terms of the people that are arrested, the members from the correctional services also felt that because of the capacity of the corrections, some of the people that are being put aside, those that are waiting for us, they are kept in the remand facilities.
So when we have to go back in time to get the samples from the convicted openness, the people say that not only in correctional centers, but also include the remand facilities, because perhaps that's most of the people most of the other criminals where they will be living, they'll be from those areas. I'm not sure what is the status of the corrections. But I think I agree to say the passive from the corrections will answer it perhaps in a rare perspective. I'm worried to speak on their behalf to say that people that are convicted are in a remand facility and are being discoded as a result. That was the understanding when it was given as an issue.
You can't be convicted if you're in a remand facility. You cannot be convicted. You're awaiting trial. Simple as that. And you don't have to be in correctional services to know that.
We need to
on this issue, members. I'm irritated, extremely irritated, because we're putting a responsibility, and I don't care even for the suggestion that maybe correctional services can answer this better. It's your bill that you bring to us. You should take ownership of this bill now. You should be able to explain these issues to us. I'm irritated by the fact that that SAS believe that there should be a bigger responsibility on correctional services than on yourself. You arrest people on a daily basis. Your cells are full of people. Some of them unlawfully being held there for years and years and years without going to correctional services facilities, without going to trial. And you know, all we want to know is, yes, we want it, and therefore, yes, members, we also need to include our own people who are currently in our cells, or no, we don't want it. Apply your minds, please. Can we get clarity on this issue? You need to get time to discuss this.
Rather discuss it with the rest of the others. When we give the submission maybe tomorrow, so we will have officially consulted on this.
This, I think, let's take over the decision. If we are going to put people in the remote centers, we must accept that these people who are not all Schedule 1 offences. Now the law allows for that. This bill allows for that. Not a problem. But then, sorry, the same applies to SAPs. Once this law becomes an acting, you will then do the same with your facilities at your stations, with people who are there in detention. SAPs wants their cake and they want to eat it. And they want the white bread, and they want everything else as well. But they're not willing to give anything. Can you correct that part of it, please, Commissioner Jacobs, and then when we come back, we can deal with it. Let's continue with that, please.
Thank you, Chair. The head of the correctional center or remand detention facility referred to in subsection 7. Or his or her delegate must ensure that the authorized person is informed within 7 days that the buccal sample or bodily sample was taken and ready for collection or is provided to the South African Police Service within 30 days. Samples for investigation purposes. 36E1, subject to section 36A3 and 5. An authorized person may take a buccal sample of a person or a group of persons if there are reasonable grounds to suspect that the person or that one or more of the persons in that group has committed an offence referred to in Schedule 1, and he believes that the sample or the results of an examination thereof will be of value in the investigation by excluding or including one or more of those persons as possible perpetrators of the offence. 2. The provisions of Section 36(b)(5) and 6 apply with the necessary changes to a sample or DNA profiles derived from therefrom as contemplated in subsection 1.
Now again, now you put in by where it's a Schedule 1 offense. I understand. And can I just go back to 8, please? Must ensure that the authorized person, authorized officer as defined in the bill, the head of the DNA, the head of forensic science, can't be the authorized person. Who's the authorized person? Authorized person is the person taking the samples.
authorized officer is informed within 7 days that the bus stop will be stopped for a safe and ready for collection. Now what's going to happen practically? They're going to phone Touch, they're going to say we're ready with the sample. Touch is going to ignore it, and then 30 days later we put the responsibility on correctional service to bring it to the laboratory. This is what it says. Practically, people, please think practically, explain to us it. What is going to happen practically?
What did the correctional service say about this item?
When this person was placed in there, correctional services said they do not have the capacity to be able to transfer all the samples to all the laboratories from all those areas. Therefore, they would want to re-delegate this function back to staff to say, we will be in those areas where we are not going to be able to furnish you with the staff. Inform you that these samples have been taken, so you are going to make a collection of those samples. Send the people or however the process may fall out from that discussion. But then the timelines are defined. The point of view that you're coming from is that they wouldn't have enough capacity to be able to take all the samples from all the facilities to send them to the nearest laboratories, but staff must take that responsibility to make sure that those samples are transported. I think that's where the discussion also came in the plane, and the question was asked, are you considering to outsource the system of collection of samples? Amongst others, we said, yes, these may be the issues that we are looking into in terms of transportation of those, because corrections don't have the facility to do this.
Correctional services won't have the facilities to store this either. So this provision is not correct.
For the student purposes, they had indicated that they could make provisions for that, because amongst other questions that were asked in terms of the freezes and the storage areas from the collection points, those were the dynamics that we were discussing in terms of keeping those samples for that period. When we were discussing these issues, they said, given the capacity, this will be dependent, of course, on where exactly are those facilities, because we need to also know those reports to say from which areas want to be able to transport these, so that they are able to know from their point of view where are they going to be to be taken from. But the major centers, we were told, there's no issue in those centers. The samples will reach the authorized officer.
There's a member of correctional services. He can tell you that they won't be able to store them. They can't store it. They won't have this.
The chairperson is saying we shouldn't believe the director general there.
General says, please don't ask us provocative questions. You see, because if you ask me whether I believe you, National Commissioner, you might not get the answer you prepared. So don't blab about that guy, Director General. But let us come back to the practical side of this question, because I think you are sketching around, General Smith. I think you'll stay here. It's, you know, more closer to the issue, which is not a bad idea. But I think what we're talking about is practical. You see, how is this DNA sample going to be taken to where they are supposed to be? And you talk about 7 days, you talk about outsourcing, you're talking about the capacity of the police themselves. And the capacity of correctional service. Now, the question is, we need to know before we finish. I'm not sure, Madam Chair, whether I want to get an answer today. From what I get, I listen to General Chief. I don't believe she's going to be able to answer. We need to know this aid, how practically this thing is going to be done to make sure that the DNA tests are at a place where they are supposed to be at the right time. Who is going to be responsible?
In the end, it's you that's going to be responsible. Staff's going to be responsible. And I think you need to redraft this whole section. It's done
for the advantage of such. You said that you're going to carry the cost of the buccal sample. It needs to be your responsibility. But the point is also that a buccal sample or bodily sample, I thought you said a buccal sample is a bodily sample. Bodily is a sample encompasses a buccal sample. So shouldn't it just read that a bodily sample was taken and ready for collection? So can we correct that first of all? And I think, quite honestly, the concern that the Honourable George is raising is one that I share with the greatest of respect. And Commissioner Shetty has got nothing to do about whether we believe the DG or not. Unfortunately, we've been here, we know that you yourself, as such, come and tell us you've got the capacity to do something and in the end you don't have the capacity to do it. That's the reality of the matter. And I think we need to reword it that within 7 days, authorized officer is informed within 7 days that a bodily sample was taken. It's not going to be one. In the case of correctional services, it will be a number of these because they, in one area, it's a lot of people at once. And ready for collection, and such must collect those within and then decide on a suitable time frame. It must be, in the end, it must be SAPS's responsibility. If you've got internal arrangement with a correctional services facility that's right next door to a laboratory, that's a different story. But in the Act, we must be clear that it's your responsibility as such to get those samples. Just now, correctional services will use this section in the bill to go to Treasury and tell Treasury they need 800,000 more or million more for vehicles to transport the samples. In the end, it's your responsibility. So can we ask Commissioner Jacobs that you read off that section to make it quite clear? Authorised officer, not person. Surely you don't want it to be reported to the police station. It must be reported to the head of the laboratory. Bodily sample is ready and that it be collected by SAPS. And I don't know why it's 30 days either.
In that we have seen rape kits sitting in storage facilities that are 4 years old and more, I mean, it's got to be really tight. I mean, number one, we have to know exactly how long it would take to collect such samples. So we can't make it an impossible time frame. But in terms of this being a crucial aid to fighting the case, surely you can't leave as long as that. On the other hand, where is the sick if it doesn't happen? Because again, we're going to find these samples lying around in stations all over the country.
Agreed. I mean, I personally believe that you should read that within 7 days that the samples are taken and ready for collection, and such must be left within 14 days. 2 weeks. Two weeks purpose. How do you do it, really? You've got vehicles that travel to the police station, to the correctional services facilities on a daily basis, sometimes on an hourly basis. Just coordinate your workings better, you might be able to collect on a daily basis as well. Can I just say that in 7 of the same section, Commissioner Jacobs, it again also refers to bodily sample and buccal sample. So we must throughout please correct this. Remember, I want to stop here. We can continue with 36.
Because they do not say that bodily sample and buccal sample is the same. Is that what they meant? Because you see now all the time you say bodily sample or what is that they meant?
Bodily sample also includes buccal samples. So it's not necessary to say buccal samples and bodily samples. They must just say bodily samples. And that would either be the blood or the buccal sample. Correct? Okay. Members, we are meeting again this evening. We're supposed to be finishing the hours at 5. Yes. Might be 5:30, but that's the time that we've been given. Can I just get an indication, how far are we down this bill now?
Chair, there's only a few very small amendments to the Criminal Procedure Act in respect of the proving of evidence. So it's a very few, a very small part that's left of the justice part, Chair.
Can I also, just before we run, now, I'll base my decision on what you say now. Can you quickly indicate to us, in terms of the homework that we've given you, in terms of the alignment of this bill with the protection of private information, where do we stand?
Chair, the State Law Advisors have drafted in a document that we have handed out to the committee the issues relating to the protection of privacy bill. It seemed to me that there's not much that need to be added to this bill. There's quite compatibility between this bill and that one. Although in terms of ethics, etc., there's some issues we need to discuss because ethics is being dealt with in the other bill. So I think we need to discuss some of those issues, but we are ready in terms of discussion, Chair, of making the submission to the committee.
Can I then also we finish today. We will not meet tonight then. I know it's going to be a very hard week for members because on Thursday evening we're sitting until 11, 12 o'clock at night. But we start tomorrow morning 9 o'clock, and we start with that, please. And then we can continue with the changes that you've made. And then with 36E, please. Because we're going to have a tough week lead, and I want to give them time to correct.
Yeah.
Can we give them, I think if the team then uses the time that we're not meeting tonight to make the corrections that is needed so that we can get that, apply your mind around the issues that we've highlighted where there are concerns, so that tomorrow morning we can start with that, please. And members, are you satisfied with it in that way? Can I just get any indication? Okay. 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, which venue? B227. Meeting
I'm going to meet the doctor.